You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You know, if you haven't checked out What Chaos yet, you oughta, because we've had all your favorite players on the show. I'm talking Seth Jones, Lena Solmark, Connor Bedard, whoever it may be.
We're live every day on YouTube at noon Eastern, but also available on all podcast platforms, including the one you're listening to right now.
We got guests, and yeah, we're also doing a bit of chit-chat, goofing around, laughing at what makes us laugh in hockey.
So regardless of how deep you are into your hockey fandom, come listen to What Chaos. We'll talk about your favorite team. We'll talk about your least favorite team and everybody in between. And we're having a ton of fun doing it every single day, Monday through Thursday. It's What Chaos, presented by All City Network.
Welcome into the DNVR Avalanche podcast. Should I go backwards on this shit? Should I start with Megan, go Rudo, then Jesse, do counter? No, I guess that would be clockwise. I normally do counterclockwise. I don't know.
I always thought you just went in order. I didn't know there was like a specific.
Well, on the other set, I would always go left to right.
Oh, okay.
So now maybe on this set, I'll go right to left.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want. this is your world. We're just living.
Except for yesterday, I didn't go. I went right to left also, I think.
I was going to say something, but I feel embarrassed.
New set, all messed up. Also, teams in the NHL actually doing stuff continues. This was kind of rumored yesterday. We will get into some RFA talk. That is something I wanted to get into. But this morning, the LA Kings made it official, signing Gavrikov for 2 years at a $5.875 million deal. So I want to start with this UFA deal with Gavrikov. First of all, a lot of people showing a little bit of surprise that it was just a two-year deal. It also has a full NMC. Why did Gavrikov decide, as a unrestricted free agent in the prime of his career, to go with a short-term deal?
So I actually remember hearing some chatter that there was a little bit of belief that this could be a theme this summer, as players wait for the salary cap to really move.
Makes sense.
I think that there is just a general sense, you know, players talk. I'm sure they've talked with each other. You know, I'm sure the PA has discussed this with them. There will be, you know, JT Compher is a good example. It's kind of an unfortunate time to be a UFA right now, because maybe more so than ever, teams are making relatively intelligent decisions with the money they're deciding to give out and the term and stuff like that, just because they know we're going to get some cap relief here in a couple of years, but we're not going to handcuff ourselves in the interim because we don't know exactly when that's going to come. Now, the question you're asking is, why would you bet on yourself in a UFA year like this?
Kind of, yeah.
Where, you know, what? How old is he?
27.
I mean, that takes him to his age 29 summer. If you have two more good seasons, it's not out of the realm of possibility that he could get another nice deal. But that's hard to, like I said, it's hard to bet on yourself at 27. Which is such, I hate that sense just came out. That makes it sound like
we're both in our 30s.
Dude, I was going to say, that was the most upsetting part about my 30th birthday, was I was like, oh man, if I was a pro athlete, people would be like, he's on the back nine.
Yeah, just play baseball. You can make it close to 40 in baseball. You'll be all right.
Good call. I guess I will just take up baseball.
Nah, right now, you can go pro.
Yeah. Exactly.
Megan, are you with Jesse on this? Is this just an all-in bet on himself, or is there a little bit more to this?
I think that's absolutely a part of it. And I think 27, it is kind of dicey. Like, I do think it's young enough that it's not the most implausible thing I've ever heard. But I also wonder if, from LA's side, that 585 was looking on the lower five end of things, if there was term, and he wanted something higher in the immediate alongside taking this bet on himself, hoping that at the end of this all, maybe he does get closer to that six mark for a next contract.
The other thing to keep in mind too is like there's absolutely a chance that you're looking at a situation where his agent told him, I don't know if we're going to be able to get much more than that on the open market. You know, just again, with the way that teams are spending money this summer, you know, this is probably going to be right in the range. If we take a short deal, you could still get one more long-term deal.
Well, it didn't quite happen the same way, but similar situation with what Nazem Kadri did.
So, dude, you took the words out of my mouth. Great call. So let's say he signs an 8-year deal. Mm-hmm. That puts him at 35. Yeah. That's a really awkward age to be trying to get that next deal, especially for the type of player that Gavrikov is. So again, you say, cool, this takes me to 29. If you're still playing good hockey, Nazem Kadri just proved you can still get someone to give you a long-term deal. And when the money, you know, the cash is flowing a little bit better, there's a little bit more certainty on not only where the salary cap is, but where it's going to go. I think this makes more sense when you dig into it than it maybe does at the surface level. Because like we're kind of saying here, on the surface, a 27-year-old looking to cash in UFA, taking a 2-year deal to stay where he's at, out of the ordinary.
A couple things here. First, this comment in the chat from John talking about the cap going way up. I don't think it's silly at all. Bettman did come on in his state of the NHL presser or whatever you want to call it and say, hey, it's only going up $1 million this summer. But there, what was a $1.1 billion deficit that the escrow owed by the players is now down to like $70 million.
Yeah.
So they're going to pay off the COVID debt.
This is one of those, because I understand the skepticism, because this is always, you know, people always, But the reason that people talk about it with such confidence is because of what you just said. There's actual dollars and cents charts that you can look at, projections that you can read that say once this happens, it'll lead to this. And right now that the causality is once you pay off this debt owed back in escrow, that will have a direct effect on the salary cap going up. So I get the skepticism, but this is one thing that is pretty black and white. You got to get the COVID escrow paid off to get a bump in the salary cap, and that will happen.
Circling back to Gavrikov, Megan, I think the most interesting part of this contract for me is the full NMC that Gavrikov gets on it. Because we see players sign these deals all the time and get flipped at the deadline. NMC kind of indicates that's not what Gavrikov wants. Is this just Gavrikov believing in LA, or is there something going on here?
Oh, I mean, that's what I imagine it to be.
Okay.
I'd be curious if you had a possible alternative, but I imagine it to be this is not only taking a little bit of a bet on himself, but it also is a bet on the organization and what he hopes to achieve in that 2-year window, because his individual success that he's taking this bet on is going to be influenced by the success of the team around him. And so in a way, he's taking a bet on LA as well in agreeing to this at his age with the 2 years. And I think he takes a look around LA's lineup and sees that this is an organization that, even as you get older, if you're still contributing and of value to the team,
very true with LA,
they respect that. And I think he appreciates that too. Like, even at the end of this 2 years, if there's another extension at the end of it, it could still be through LA. And I kind of imagine that's where his head is at.
Well, and it also gives him a little bit more control, because let's say the wheels do come off for LA here. I don't think they will. I think that's a team that's
I think they're on the up as well.
They got to get something figured out in net. But let's say that does happen. Gives him a little bit of control that he can't just be, you know, sold off to the highest bidder at a deadline, you know, to the point that Megan was making. If he likes it in LA, if he thinks that's a good fit for him, he can say, I'm good just kind of sitting here. Let's talk contract this summer. But if it's not working out for them, he has some hands on the wheel. Let's say,
I don't want to go there. It's interesting. And this is a conversation we don't have to get too far into, but more and more, it feels like there is more power going towards players in negotiation. Like when we were growing up, the teams basically held players hostage and they didn't want to sign. So I think that's a good thing too, for the record.
But I mean, dude, it goes hand in hand with what we were talking about on Monday, that there's just a new way of thinking for athletes at the professional level. And it maybe doesn't feel that way all the time, because to make it to the NHL, the NBA, NFL, whatever, you have to be wired a certain way.
Yeah.
And like you just do to put in that kind of work, to have that kind of sacrifice, to travel and willing to be away from your family and, you know, working out at 6 a.m. before morning skate, then getting a light workout after morning skate, go home, make sure you're eating right, get a nap, get back to the rink, warm up, play your game, then work out again. Like the average person, like mentally, you can't get to where these people are. So that's why it's maybe hard to notice. But like there is a shift in the culture for professional sports. Athletes are more in control of their brand. Athletes are more in control of their money. You know, they've got agents. They've now been working with, you know, agents in case of the NHLers, you know, from the time they were 15, 16, they've got money managers, they've got family, you know, plan managers, things like that. And they're just taking a little bit more control. And they're basically saying like, yeah, I'm not going to let you bully me into a, you know, 3-year bridge deal.
Nonsense, at a terrible deal. Yeah. That
doesn't reflect my value. I'm fine, you know, sitting out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine requesting a trade, because they almost kind of see it, which I think is a good thing, is like this, you guys always get to claim the business side. We're doing the same thing.
Yep.
And there's been just a little bit of a shift in the power there. And I think that's another reason why, again, going back to Monday conversation, you're going to start to see a new wave of coaches, new waves of GMs, because you have to, the old school, you know, Lou Lamoriello philosophy, like that just doesn't fly anymore.
It does not work in the NHL at this point, basically.
And I'm with you. I think it's a good thing.
Me too. I do want to circle this into the Avs, Megan. I know we talked a little bit about this in Taves yesterday. If you want to expand on that, go for it. But also, I get Gavrikov's a defenseman. Very similar situation to JT Compher's offseason here, though. Do those things affect each other at all?
Oh, I absolutely think so. Because even as you ask Gavrikov's age, I had to confirm JT Compher's 28 years old. Mm-hmm. And I do wonder then what kind of a position he's in the conversations he is likely to have with other organizations, if they're willing to offer him anything more than, I'm going to cap it at like 4 years. I don't know. And I do wonder if he's looking at shorter term options with higher value up front, or if this is something that maybe points back to Colorado somehow. Like, is JT Compher's path through Colorado still alive and well? Have I written him off too soon? It does still feel like the market demands for centerman is going to put him so high that I still don't know if it's possible, because where I'm imagining JT Compher is still in this flex third, second line centerman role, and that I don't feel 100% comfortable running that back specifically. If he was utilized in a third line capacity more consistently, it wouldn't justify what he is likely to still ask for. So anyways, I think these things do lend themselves to each other though, because I think he's still chasing down a pretty fair payday, because that's what this is for Gavrikov. This is still a really fair payday at the end of the day.
It's not cheap for sure.
And it lends itself to the Taves conversation too, that we're now looking at another player that beyond next year, especially if the cap does go up, if we're
however much,
he's going to price himself out pretty quickly.
Yeah. So and that's my only thing, that the only part where I disagree with what you were saying, and it's not even necessarily disagree, it's more just like kind of an additional variable, is like Gavrikov was highly coveted at the deadline. Like a lot of teams trying to get him, and there was a lot of conversations like, you know, this is a really solid guy on your back end when he gets to UFA. JT Compher just had like a career year. Like his stock has never been higher. And I just can't imagine that his agent is telling him like, I'm sure you'll have two more of those. Like you can sign a bridge, you know? So like, I just do think that JT Compher in particular will have a little bit more emphasis on getting the money that he feels he's worth, you know, right now, because I just don't know if he would bet on himself as confidently as Gavrikov rightfully did. I think, you know, I think he's a very good player.
I don't think he could sign a bridge. I think if he were going to bet on himself, one, he would have to believe the Avalanche have a spot for him where he could put up another 50-point season.
I agree, yep.
And then, based on what we understand of the salary cap, it would be a one-year deal. It would be, hey, let's run this back one more time. You can put up 50 points with us on a one-year deal, and then the cap will go up, and you can go get paid by whoever is going to pay you.
And maybe it's the Avs. I don't know.
I don't think it will be the Avs,
yep.
But it could be. And the problem there is, one, Confer has to believe he can do it again. Mm-hmm. Two, I think it's pretty likely that the writing is on the wall that the Avs are going to aggressively target a two center.
Right.
That isn't JT Confer.
Right. I was going to say, because that's the other point that Megan just made. That's a good point, that if you're bringing him back to be the 3C, he's probably not repeating that performance. You're probably not going to want to give your third line center anywhere near what another team would give him to be a second line center. But I do think that if he were to do that, if he were to say, I'm betting on myself, he doesn't do it with anyone other than the Avs. So if you're going to see a 2 year or less deal for JT Confer, it's with Colorado.
Yep. I think it's interesting how those things shake up, because I think you're right. It's what does JT have to gain from betting on himself? I guess a higher salary cap.
Yeah.
How much does that actually translate into as far as a contract for him?
And it would have to be, I'm betting on myself, and I think I can get another ring in the next 2 years with the Avs.
Yeah. Fair enough. I guess experience matters.
Separate from a betting on yourself, there's some component of a proving yourself too. Like if he is looking outside of the Colorado organization, they might not be comfortable with a longer contract in the 3 to 4 range. They might only be interested in 1 to 2.
If that's the market for him, his agent's done a horrible job, in my opinion.
So my thing is there,
because of like what you mentioned a minute ago, there's just a dearth of centers. Like he's one of the few. It's Ryan O'Reilly.
Well, the thing is, a lot of people talk about free agency and overpaying players. And while overpays do happen as far as dollar amount, usually the overpay teams make in free agency is term.
You said the mistake they make?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Overpay of a Patrick. Exactly. Because that's what players want. Most of the time, players want stability in their contracts. That's what they're looking for when they go into free agency. They want to be set because, as we kind of talked about with Gavrikov, at most, you sign 2 free agency, real free agency deals that aren't, you know, 1-2 years at the end of your career. Right. You get 2 shots at that. Mm-hmm. And one of those needs to kind of set you for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. So most players look at that and say, I want term coming out of this as much as I want money, if not more than the dollar amount.
Unless the dollar amount, like what you were saying earlier, Megan, unless that dollar amount is going to be significantly more for a 1 or 2 year deal than what he could go out and get on the market or, you know, from other teams, I tend to lean towards what you're saying. I have to imagine that JT Confer, you know, his girlfriend, his agent, you know, his family, they're sitting there saying, that career year came at a great time, and you can't do this
forever. Strike while the iron's hot here
Right. You know, a guy like him, maybe 10 years left in the league. If he really ages well, you know, with the physicality and stuff, 11 maybe. So it's like, make sure you're taking care of your situation.
I think that makes perfect sense. The only reason I bring up prove yourself is because before a career year are several seasons worth of a very different story. It's not bad. It's mm-hmm. just there's an average before that it's hard to reconcile the last year of the career year where you also recognize he's playing in a top six made up of Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen. And you could see where some of the career comes from alongside then a playoff performance that fell flat. I just wonder if some of the leverage was lost because of this.
I mean, we were making that joke through the all 7 games. We were like, well, maybe the Avs can keep JT Comfort after all. But I do think, so again, and that was why I make the comment of, if that's the case, his agent has done a horrible job, because what his agent needs to be doing is saying he was a high-end bottom six Swiss Army knife type player. He killed penalties. He played on the power play. Good playoff performer. And then, because you're right, Megan, and anyone knows this, but the way teams get caught up in free agency, the way he's going to pitch that is, and last year he finally got the top six opportunity. Yeah. You put this player, you put my client in your top six surrounded by good talent, look what he can do. He's a 50 to 60 point guy.
Just casually ignore he's had that opportunity 4
right,
times.
Right. Oh, no. We don't need to mention, 2017. No. Not. I'm more of talking about 2023. Like, you know, that should be, and what I imagine will be, the sales pitch from his agent and JT Confer when talking to other teams. This guy is worth 5x5 because he can do it all. And look, he just played in a top six on a Stanley Cup contender and held his own, totally filled in admirably. That should be their pitch, and that's why, with all due respect to JT Compher, I'm a big fan of JT Compher's game, the way he plays, what he brings. He's probably going to get pretty overpaid. I suspect that he will be one of those contracts we'll look back at next summer and be like, oops.
Two things I want to bring up there. One, I think you made a great point about the idea that JT Compher does everything. Teams do really value, especially when you're talking about a second line or middle six guy. He penalty kills for you. Yep. He's turned himself into not an amazing, but a good enough face-off guy that you can use him in those situations.
He was among the best in Colorado. Yeah.
Take that for what it's worth. But he does all of these other things, considered a solid defensive guy. Actually, I think he's a little bit overrated around the league defensively.
This is a JT Compher smear campaign. In an effort to bring him back to Colorado, like, you guys don't really want him.
I'm saying these are parts of the reasons that teams are going to talk themselves into going and getting JT Compher.
Absolutely.
I think he's an above average defensive
I agree with above average. A lot, some people try to call him elite. I don't think he's that, but he will help you defensively. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing, the one thing we haven't talked about here that comes into NHL players' decisions, they're human beings. JT Compher's from Chicago.
Yeah.
There's all the reasons in the world that he would want to go back to Chicago.
Right up until draft lottery night, I actually thought, I was like, that's probably a shame for him that they're at the point that they're at, because he would have no interest in going there.
Yeah.
As soon as they win Connor Bedard, suddenly JT Compher looks like the perfect player.
Slotted behind Bedard.
Perfect player to go to Chicago. He's won a Stanley Cup. Like you said, he's responsible. He gets what it means to be a pro. There's a reason that of the frat line there, he was the one that stuck. I think there's a lot of incentive. And that's a team that's got money to play with, and they don't need, like, they can give the term. Because even with Bedard, they're 3 years from even being, like, competitive. And so they can give him the money. They're fine strapping themselves 4 or 5 years. Come home. Live near your family, live near, you know, where your sister plays. Yeah. Is she going back to Wisconsin?
I actually don't know what year she was in.
You know, regardless, it's all in that area.
Yeah.
And you've played with Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar. You know what it's like to play with great players. Come help this guy get acclimated to the league, learn what it's like to be a pro, and play the bumper spot on his power play.
Yep. Seems like a pretty sweet deal.
She might be done.
Well,
Dylan says she graduated.
All the PHF teams are out east anyway, so.
Yeah.
Is she going to play in the PHF? I don't actually
know. All I
know
is I don't think Abby Newhook is going to.
Is she not? Yeah. Okay.
Sure.
Well,
that's the only one that I know of.
Olympic U.S. team is in Ann Arbor, so.
Yeah.
You know, you're closer to Chicago than Colorado, put it that way.
Right.
All right. On that note. It is the off season for everyone but Vegas and Florida, so it's time to get out on the golf course. Get your swing going a little bit. To do that, make sure you sign up with Colorado Golf. You can join over 75,000 golfers with the Colorado Golf Association today and get an official USGA handicap and worldwide access to score posting, and GPS tracking. Membership means more at the CGA. You get access to a bunch of exclusive courses around the state, including Aspen Glen Club, the club at Ravenna, and the Pinery, not to mention, you know, all the other amazing courses around the state, which Colorado has, like, an impressive number of really nice golf courses.
Yeah, I mean, just ask Charles Barkley.
There you go. Hey, his swing's looking better these days.
I forgot about that either.
Members also get access to exclusive content with offers and discounts from national and local brands, including Imperial Golf Tech, PGA Tour, Superstore, and more. You can learn more by going to coloradogolf.org today. And when you sign up, use code DNVR5 to get $5 off your membership. And then when you're done with your round, go get yourself a delicious Breckenridge Brewery beer. You can get them at your local liquor store. Use a Breck Beer Locator online to find it near you. You don't even have to be in Colorado. They're in all 50 states at this point. Of course, after round, great time to come down to the DNVR bar, grab a drink there. We've got 8 different kinds of Breck Brew on tap. So check them out. They've got a flavor for everyone. Breckbrew.com for more info. second period of the DNVR Avalanche podcast. I do want to start moving into some RFA talk before we get to Cole Caulfield. Let me ask you this. Does Gavrikov's contract have any impact at all on what Bone Byram is going to do?
I don't think so.
I'll say no.
Okay.
I think he's been in this solid stage of negotiation for a while that I think he has an idea of what he wants. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I don't know if it's wavering.
Yeah, I don't know if Bo and his agent are looking for like a market to be set. They have a, they apparently have a pretty good idea of what they think the market should be.
Know your worth, King.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Straight up. I mean, like, that's what it is right now for Bo. He's like, I don't care. Gavrikov can do whatever he wants.
He's probably like not even aware of this news. Yeah, yeah. Doesn't need to be.
All right. So is Bo's worth 100 times what I make or only like 75? Be 5 mil, Chet. 5 mil is 100 times what
look,
I make.
Look, here's the thing. How'd you guys feel about the Cole Caulfield deal? We don't have to get into it yet, but what did you guys think?
Love the 8 years for the team.
Yep. Megan?
I feel fine about it. It seems interesting from Caulfield's perspective, but
I agree with that.
I didn't know if we wanted to like dive too deep into it, but
we're getting into it one way or another.
Yeah,
so.
Feel like it is slightly to the benefit of Montreal, but for Caulfield, I mean, there's flexibility in the middle of it and at the end of it until, especially like I'm trying to see when his no move kicks in. Let's see.
I think it's the fifth year.
To me, that's a deal, and the fact that we haven't seen Bo and Byram sign one of those tells me that he probably also thinks that that deal favors Montreal more than it does Cole Caulfield, and that's why Bo hasn't taken a deal like that. But like to me, if the Avs came out tomorrow and announced an 8 year, what? Six?
Yeah, I don't think you can go over six.
Right. So yeah, so 8 years by six for Bo and Byram, I think that's a grand slam home run.
Yeah. You've got two players side by side with injury concerns, but definitely a different conversation with Byram specifically that you want that term, and that's a very fair value. He could absolutely exceed that in his career, but with the injury concerns, it seems really fair from Byram's perspective.
And see, what's so interesting about this situation for me, I only saw one person on Twitter that didn't like the Caulfield deal, and they were upset by the term relative to the injuries. And I was like, you're out of your mind because you're projecting on the player. And so that's where I don't know this for certain, but I'd be willing to bet this is where the negotiations are held up right now between the Avs and Byram's camp. Is Byram and his camp are saying, and I'm sure the Avs are to a certain extent, we know what kind of player he's projecting to be.
Mm-hmm.
I know my worth. I know what I've done. I know that there was three games in the Stanley Cup final last year where I was the best player on the ice.
Yeah.
But it's unfortunate, right, wrong, indifferent, fair, unfair. The dude's young career has been plagued by injuries.
Yep.
Plagued. He hasn't come close to playing a full season yet.
In three NHL seasons, the last one was his healthiest at 42 regular season games.
42. So it's again, it's unfortunate. That sucks that's the hand you've been dealt, especially when you look at what the injuries were. That's a really unfortunate hand to be dealt, but it's reality. The Avs have to take some precautions that, dude, in 3 years, you've barely broken the halfway mark for one season.
Yeah.
We have to hedge our bets a little bit here.
Absolutely, especially knowing the recurring nature of the head injury specifically. But then there is some element of recognizing in this last year, it wasn't upper body related. Yep. So like this is just unfortunate circumstance, but they can't really hold that against him in the same way as the concern for repeatable concussions. Mm-hmm. It's like different conversation.
You could live with lower body stuff, right? The concussion stuff is, you get one or two more of those, your career might just be over.
Well, but, and you could honestly, though, you could even, depending on where you're at in the negotiation, That could actually even maybe be a detriment. Look, we're not just talking about a couple freak head injuries here. You missed half the season with a lower body injury that didn't get better.
You're now injury prone beyond the head.
Right, yeah. Right. You know, we thought you were going to be gone for 3 weeks when we were in Finland. We didn't get you back for half the season. So again, I'm with you. Logically, you know that it's probably better that it's not the same injury over and over. But depending on how you're trying to negotiate, you could frame that as like, and you're just getting injured all over the place now.
Here's the other part from Colorado's side of how things they're talking about, things they're trying to negotiate Byram down on. Byram's coming to him saying, look, I know how good I am. I know what I'm worth. And Colorado's going, great. Doesn't matter. You will always be the number two here.
Yes. But I really do think that the long-term plan is those two.
I do too. But
welded together.
Very definitively, Kale is number one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's just a difference. You can't afford to pay two number ones.
I think if you've, at least in the next 5 years, if you got both those dudes hovering around 10, you're in a tough spot. But I don't know. I mean, that's honestly why I think something like 5 years, $4 million is kind of the sweet spot, because it gives you time to get the cap up, have a better idea of what kind of player Byram has turned into, of the injuries, you know, leveled off. Do we want this 1A, 1B situation? Do you just push your chips to the middle and say, you know, we have the ultimate first pair.
So
our top pairing trumps any other top pairing matchup in the league.
The one thing on the surface, I think 5 years does make a lot of sense. The one thing the Avs need to be careful about with that is walking him straight to free agency.
I say that without looking at his breakdown.
Yep.
Is he have 4 years of RFA left?
I don't know if the first year counted or not.
If you're not going to go to eight, you need to get yourself to the next RFA.
I agree. If that's 3-4, whatever
right.
it
don't,
is.
Don't do what Toronto did with Matthews. And now you're playing this game
this
of
guy
chicken.
Walk next
right,
year.
Right, right. Yeah, don't do that.
And I don't even know if I'm fully saying don't do that. If you believe 5 years of Byram wins you one or two cups in the next 5 years, yep. You don't care.
I agree with that. Well, and it's the organization betting on itself.
Yep.
We think in 5 years we'll have won another cup and we'll be in a position to keep you because you'll have proven that you're just too valuable.
Megan, are you on board with a middle term deal, or are you thinking more long term, more bridge with Bo?
I think I started from a place of middle term, like even just in the beginning. But if I'm thinking from the Avs organization perspective, like depending on what the value Bo is looking for, term might be better in the long run, just with what he's projected to be. But I see that a little like there is a player who is going to continue to advocate for himself down the line into his career. So I could see something like the no move being activated sooner in his contract if they do that, so that he has some leverage down the line kind of a thing. So that's sort of where I'm at if we're looking at term.
Okay.
This might be a little controversial.
Oh boy.
I'm officially in the camp of, and I say this knowing that he's an outstanding defender, maybe a top 10 defender in the NHL right now. I am officially in the camp of move Taves and just embrace Bo and Byram on your top pair.
I thought you were about to slander Byram there.
No.
Don't give him term.
No, I'm straight up saying move on from what I think is right now a top 10 defender in the NHL, because there's a good to very good chance that you cannot afford Devon Taves next summer, even with a cap bump. So I'm almost saying use him to bring in a 2C and say, we're just going to go ahead and slot Bo in there. We're going to bet on him being a high-end player. We're going to give him a long-term deal. We'll go a little bit on the money, maybe not quite to the level he wants, but we're going to make the roster commitment to him. We're going to make the ice time commitment to him. We're going to make a dollar commitment to him and solve a couple of your problems.
I don't hate it, but that's the decision. If you're deciding to give Bo a long-term deal, I think you're basically saying we are not extending Taves.
100%. 100%.
That's the conversation that the Avs are having right. about it.
Because that is where you get into the territory of, what are you going to pay three guys? Mm-hmm. You're going to pay three guys in your back end?
Now you're Nashville.
Right. North of 7-8? Like, what are we doing here?
Yep.
Now, I mean, I know there's going to be people that'll say, you know, move Gerard. Sure.
You can have that conversation too.
Sure.
The reason we talk about Taves as this move is because he's a pending UFA at the end of this coming season anyway.
Right. And it's just, yeah. We don't need to go down this road.
We've been down it many, many, many times with that. I do want to move on from the defensive side of this. It is a Cole Caulfield deal. He's a forward. It doesn't really seem super relevant to Alex Newhook to me, but maybe you guys disagree.
No, they're just, I mean, Cole Caulfield's had a 20 goal season.
Newhook's had a 15.
You're not wrong.
Newhook did it in 80 games and Caulfield did it in about 36.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, I don't know. And I mean, just like with where they're projected, you know, they're really looking at Caulfield to be not just, you know, hopefully a top six guy. They're looking to be a top line contributor, you know, can kind of carry the mail on a lot of nights. They're looking for him to be closer to Nathan McKinnon than
Alex Newhook,
a 2C, yeah, you know,
that's
like
fair.
Now, again, I'm not saying Cole Caulfield's going to get there, but that's the expectation. That's the hope for a player of his caliber.
Fair enough. I do think it's hard to put Newhook anywhere near that category.
I agree. I think if you end up at any point with a top six player in Alex Newhook, you're doing cartwheels down 16. Maybe not 16.
Yeah,
six,
you'd get poor choice. Kicked. Poor yeah, choice yeah, to yeah. do it on 16th, baby.
Yeah, yeah, you're doing cartwheels through McGregor Square. All right?
There you go. You'd be a little safer there. Megan, when it comes to Newhook, how much does Newhook's future play into the Avs conversation with JT Compher?
I do feel like they're a little bit separate only because of where Compher's at presently. He just demands more.
Oh, for sure.
That I think it's okay. Actually, they're connected in that I think this is also where they have some comfort in allowing JT Compher to move on to bigger, better payday because of a Ben Myers, Alex Newhook type.
Myers is a good point as well, yeah.
It's a Newhook ahead of Myers in that line, but it is the hope that Newhook could become a well-rounded player in the same way that JT Compher was. I think that we've seen teases of that last year and how he was utilized to our frustration at times. Like, well, we want him to be this second-line centerman type player, but he's playing on the fourth, third line. And I do think if he is to be utilized like the Swiss Army knife that JT Compher is, these do link in that way, that could be the hope for what Newhook could ascend to in the immediate. Like, he could always excel beyond that expectation, but I think that's the immediate hope for Newhook is to become a mainstay on the third line. That's sort of where I'm penciling him in for next season.
Yep.
The only tricky part is he isn't quite to the level of being able to do everything the way that JT Compher is.
No,
not even with penalty killing
right.
yep.
whatsoever.
In like, his own end, just
exactly.
Period.
It's a shortcoming. And I think that's one reason why he was on lines with some of the players that he was and hopes to get that type of player out of him. And maybe with some consistency, it still feels like a year out from realizing this. But to answer your question, I take it back. These two are linked to one another, but it is hard. Like, I think we've even talked on pods before that we'd be interested in getting somebody for a third line centerman role. If 2C was resolved first, potentially a top six second line winger was resolved first. All right, then we'd be interested in hearing that out. But once those two things get resolved, how much is left to really come up with an external solution there beyond an internal in Alex Newhook? Like, that might be the only option they're left with, in my opinion.
To me, it's, yes, Alex Newhook and then also Evan Rodriguez.
I was going to say he's the other one, too, that is maybe just a cheaper version of JT Compher.
There are two spots, three guys. Mm-hmm. Three doesn't go into two.
Right.
One of them's not going to be there. Newhook's an RFA, so he's staying.
Yeah, My only thing with Newhook, and this is the first time I've said this because I've been a big defender of the kid's 22.
Yeah, for sure.
He just played his sophomore season. I think the expectations on him from the fan base have been a little bit lofty. However, even if you're saying we solved the 2C problem, we need you to be JT Confort, his game has to, like, he needs to go a long way by the start of next season. And he needs to go an even longer way by the end of next season. I thought Alex Newhook had an outstanding rookie year. 15 goals.
Yeah, 30-plus points.
30-plus point player. I thought he was outstanding for a first-year NHLer. You know, he had a couple moments where he was pulled out of the lineup, a healthy scratch, start of the playoffs, was impactful as soon as he came back into the lineup. He understood the messaging. He knew what he needed to do. I was really encouraged by that. This last season, I think, was a little bit disappointing. I'd be willing to bet you he would say the same thing if you asked him. He just, if you want him to even be JT Comfort, I think he's a ways off of that at game 82 of this past season. He needs to come a long way.
I do want to talk about that a little bit more, but when you're out on the golf course negotiating contracts, make sure you're looking good in your pins and aces gear. I don't know. What do you wear to a contract negotiation? A polo? I don't know. T-shirt?
Pocket protector for your blue ink pen.
Yes.
Ready to sign.
Ready to sign.
Megan has seen my pins and aces button up.
It's so cool.
I'd wear that to a business meeting.
There you go.
So I'd wear that to a funeral.
Even off the golf course.
You can wear it anywhere.
They've got you covered. I would not wear my pins and aces shirt to a funeral.
Hey, I'm just trying to say. It's comfortable. It's breathable.
I love I love my shirt. I love the athletic material. Yeah, I don't know what it's called.
So did you get a button up?
Yeah.
I got the polo half button.
So here's been, and I always mention this when I do the reads. I have had a legitimate beef with men's, I don't even want to call it dress clothes, but just button up collared shirts, men's collared shirts. My entire life, because they are made for most companies out of the only fabric known to man that doesn't stretch and doesn't breathe. I don't know where they found it. I don't know who came up with it in the early 1800s, and it just stuck all the way up until I got this Pins and Aces shirt. And it's the first time I've ever had a collared shirt that when you do this, it stretches. When you do this, when you reach for something, you're not being strangled by your collar. You're not just sweating like crazy into there because you can't get it's hurricane force winds. Can't feel a thing. Not the case with my Pins and Aces collared shirts that I've gotten. They look great.
Breathable. There you go. You can get all of your golf apparel through Pins and Aces. They've got the polos. They've got pants. They got shorts. They got cleats. Whatever you need. They've got beautiful hats too. And then they have extra cool stuff. You want to be the cool guy on the golf course. You get stuff like the liquor sticker, the beer sleeve. Have your alcohol good to go in your golf bag. Serve the other people and they'll be like, oh, you're a pretty cool guy.
Yep.
Pretty cool guy.
Go to pinsandaces.com today. Use the DNVR10 code on your order to get 10% off when you do. And then once you've done that, go check out Shady Rays. Make sure you're looking good. Clothes, good sun. I wouldn't wear sunglasses to a contract signing maybe, but in sunglasses inside.
If you're signing for $65 million.
You wear whatever the hell you want. That's true.
Next move.
It's true. Yeah, exactly. Depends on how big Bo's contract actually is.
Right.
Maybe you're signing outside, all right? You're at a table outdoors, at the golf course even.
Exactly.
So get your Shady Rays sunglasses. Tons of different types. They've got a style for everyone. They've got different polarizations. They've got different colors. They've got it all. ShadyRays.com. Use the DNVR code. When you order two pairs or more, you get 50% off your entire order. And they have a brick and mortar here in Colorado in the Park Meadows Mall if you want to go check them out in person. If you don't, it's okay. Because even if you get them delivered to you and you don't like them, they give you 30 days to send them back. If you don't like them, if you break them, if you lose them, just let them know. If you have the pair still, send it back. They'll replace them. Or they'll just refund you if you really hate them. So great customer service from Shady Rays. Check them out, shadyrays.com. Use the DNVR code. Third period of the DNVR Avalanche podcast presented by DraftKings Sportsbook.
I just want to interject real fast on this Newhook comment that's on here. It says, I feel like giving Alex Newhook consistent line mates would be, he can be productive. Megan and I talked about this on an At The Rink. Megan, this is probably 2 months ago now at this point. But that is one asterisk to include when you talk about the season that Alex Newhook did have. 100%. Going into training camp, 2 weeks before training camp, the idea was some version of Nichushkin, McKinnon, Rantanen, Landeskog, Lehkonen, Newhook as your top six.
Yep.
Let's say you went with, you know, Lehkonen, McKinnon, Rantanen on that top line. At least to start.
Whatever, yeah.
Alex Newhook, having Landeskog and Nichushkin riding shotgun is a much different look than him centering Logan O'Connor.
You're not worried about him doing JT conference level of defense with those two guys next to him, right?
And then, Megan, I think you were the one that pointed out at the time that maybe his most consistent and best stretch of the season came when he was playing with Andrew Cogliano and Logan O'Connor. Who's just better versions of those two players? Gabe Landeskog and Val Nichushkin. Like, right. that was the model. We're going to put him with defensively responsible players that dig pucks out and are going to put him in positions to be able to utilize his skill set, his shot, his speed, his hands. And it just never really got to that point. So I stand by what I was saying a minute ago, that he has a lot of ground to cover to even be at JT Compher's level. But that is definitely a bit of context from this last season that, yeah, playing with top six players night in, night out would have probably made a difference for him.
Yeah, because I think where he
consistent players
lost some of Bednar's favor was the lack of production. And I have to wonder if some of that is because of him being in this third, fourth line capacity with a lot of players who are struggling to finish throughout many points of the season. Yep. Him included. He's a part of that.
He got beat out by Dennis Malgin.
Exactly. And that's why it was not just like we talked about some of the defensive shortcomings, but there is something to be said for he has more to give offensively that he hasn't quite given yet, and they need that from him. And you get that when you have a little more talent alongside you too. So hopefully the consistency and the talent.
So here's where I don't disagree with you guys, but I think line mates feels a little bit like treating the symptoms with Alex Newhook, because you saw this year. I am not going to pretend to know the exact inner workings of what the Avs do every day, but get that dude a sports psychologist schedule and get that guy to get in the right headspace. Because when he's confident, you can see it. That dude is a top six player when he's confident. He just cannot consistently keep himself there. And when he loses that confidence, all of a sudden, in my opinion, his best weapon in the offensive zone, his shot, when he loses it, he just stops even trying.
Well, and it also looks like, when that happens, there were several times this year where I stopped and said, is the game still moving too fast for him? Like, is he still getting up to speed? Because despite the line mates and the whatever, Megan, how many times were you and I like wringing our fists at that dude just passing up on shots from inside the home plate?
Yeah. Yep.
Or double clutching and like trying to outweigh a goaltender, and all that goaltender does is now slide out,
into the position. Angle. Yeah.
Now you got two defenders on you. He'll just miss the net. Like, that is the stuff where it's like, that is on you. That's not line mates. That's not whatever. Because like you said, Megan, I think part of the reason there was frustration was because it was like, okay, well, we're going to bump him down to the bottom six, but now at least he can produce. He can be the production down there. And when they bumped Dennis Malgin up over Alex Newhook because he was producing, I thought that was not damning. It wasn't like that's the end of Alex Newhook's career, but it's just like, dude, you're being outproduced by a waiver wire pickup. That should be you. What Dennis Malgin is producing, we expect it out of you. And that was the part that was disappointing, because I'm with both of you guys. I think his hands and his shot are his best tools. And when you see the dude just straight passing up on opportunities, it's like, what is going on here? This is something beyond ice time.
Yep.
Oh, 100%. He defers too much, and it definitely feels like a confidence issue. There's some reservation in his mind in those moments that he has to fight through.
And I feel like there's a break point there where either, you know, there's a world where his career never gets there and he never figures out the mental side of the game. And what we see now is probably fairly similar to who he's going to be for the rest of his career. Or he breaks through that barrier. He understands that, oh, I do belong here. I am good enough. Whatever. I can be confident in myself, even if I have a couple games that don't go my way. And then you start having a conversation of, I don't think he's a one-to-one replacement of JT Compher. I don't think he's ever going to bring you the defensive side that JT has, but he can be a more offensively productive version of JT Compher.
Can you get Burakovsky out of him?
It's a great, not as big, but offensively, it's a very, very good comparison. I actually really like that.
If you can get that out of him, I think you're happy.
Yeah.
That, I know that's what they're looking for out of a guy like Oscar Olausson.
Yep.
Can you give us Burakovsky?
Right.
Score a bunch of goals. That ends up in your
middle six, gives you 50 to 60 points, 20, 25 goals.
Yep.
If Alex Newhook is doing that for Colorado, it's an easy win for them.
Can do it from the third line as necessary.
Right. Exactly.
Because there might not always be second line opportunity in minutes.
Yep. But have value, and we can flex you up because we know you can hang.
You'll be comfortable. Yep. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we've solved all the Avs problems in the 50-minute show.
Get Joe on the phone. Yeah.
We didn't even talk about Cedric Parra. I'm just kidding.
Are those Avs problems or Eagles problems?
It's just another contract from today that we didn't talk about.
If you got something to say.
Did you guys talk about your boy Wyatt yesterday?
We did.
Yes, yeah. It happened on air. It was really exciting. Oh, that's
right. Yeah.
No, we don't have to talk about that. All right. Okay. There was really not much to say. I'm so sorry. Happy for him. Well earned.
We got the news in there. It counts.
There are
all right.
some players that will be on the Colorado Eagles next year.
There are some. That's a great way to put it.
Have you heard anything on Galchenyuk?
No, actually, I've been meaning to put out some feelers. Yeah, so I will see what is out there.
Is he some players?
Right.
I've only done it directly.
Well, and he seemed like a great fit. Seemed like the relationship was good.
Yeah.
And that's another guy that I just, given what we heard about the growth in his game, if the Avs decide to bring him back, that is another guy that I would not sleep on as having a shot at the NHL roster.
Yep. Somewhere in that depth. Yep.
I'm penciling him in because of the positive relationship he built in Colorado that there might not be in other NHL organizations.
Right. It seems like it'd be a waste to come do all of that for a year on both sides.
You put in so much work.
Put in all of that for a year just to let the guy walk, or in his instance, just to walk
to
and
not
go
be
somewhere
in the
else.
NHL anymore.
Right. Unless he's going to go sign with like Anaheim.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be funny? Magna, Cronin, Galchenyuk.
I hope he's back. He was great in the room. I really enjoyed the handful of times.
I like the head on his shoulders. I think it's a good cultural fit.
Are we official for Friday? Is that happening for sure? Before I start advertising things,
we're gonna have a guest on. We're fairly confident. It was supposed to happen this morning. We had to push it a little bit, but yeah, we will have someone on to talk about finals and things like that. And
yeah,
hopefully it'll be
not gonna spoil any names, but. Guest for Friday show
chat.
It's
a cool guest.
Yeah. Keep it locked there. We're going to get out of here for today. We appreciate all y'all hanging out, talking RFA and contract stuff with us. We will be back tomorrow. Jesse and I will be back tomorrow talking, I don't know, more hockey nonsense. Maybe someone will sign another terrible coach.
All right, let me ask one last thing. It's not hockey related. There was a comment about it earlier. The Messi stuff.
Yep.
Do you guys think that moves the needle at all for MLS in the United States?
Not really. The MLS has been doing this for decades where guys get to the end of their career and then go over to the MLS and make a bunch of money to be bad at sports.
I don't know anything about that industry, but it's really cool in my eyes.
It's cool. It's super cool. It's
like,
super
to me, it should move the needle.
Let me ask you this. When Pavel Datsyuk went to the KHL, did it up your interest at all in the Continental Hockey League?
It didn't.
No.
Yeah. It didn't.
Great comparison. I think that's exactly sums it up.
But you know what? But think about my proximity to the KHL versus the soccer fan base that football. I don't know. I'm so sorry. I've offended someone.
Soccer's
he used to play football. Now he plays soccer.
So, there is a pretty good soccer fan base that will rally around it here. Like, perhaps.
Right. But it's already a good fan base. I just don't think anybody's like, you know what? I'm going to get into the MLS now.
Is it good?
But I mean, like, I'm sorry. You're correct. What I mostly mean is like that base is the base.
The diehards will love it.
You're right.
They're going to be hyped on. You're 100% right. It's probably going to sell more jerseys for those people. But I saw a bunch of people this morning like,
outside of it. That's
this
fair.
Is going to explode the game in the U.S. I was like, you haven't done a lot of market research,
The casual will be like, oh, so Lionel Messi, this guy's pretty cool. And they'll watch one game. They'll be like, ah, it's still soccer, huh?
They'll watch one set of highlights. It's still the MLS.
Anyway, we're going to get out of here for today. We like all of you. We love all of you. Like, subscribe on YouTube, and we will talk to you tomorrow.